Welcome to Entrepreneurship at Rowan, an official production of the award-winning Rowan Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. We cover the entrepreneurial pulse of Rowan students, faculty, and alumni. Prepare to be Rowan proud.
Hello, Rowan University. My name is Aiden Tamazian, and I am your host for Season 4 of the Entrepreneurship at Rowan podcast. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Ms. Isabel Kent, CEO of Philly Startup Leaders, and of course, a member of Rowan's Entrepreneurship Advisory Council. Isabel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Absolutely. We're really excited to have you. So we typically like to start off with a little lightning round, just some easy questions to get the juices flowing. So let's dive right into it. First up, what was the last book you really enjoyed and what made it so special?
I really love Play Bigger. So it's one of the books that I recommend for anyone that's a startup in our community because it helps them think about category development and just the different ways that they can identify market opportunities. It's also just a very sassy, punchy book. And so that's one of my favorites.
Awesome. I haven't heard of it before, but I'll have to check it out now.
Yeah, it's a rare find. Highly recommend.
Who's the author?
It's actually four different guys that have a consulting company together, also called Play Bigger, and they have a second book called Niche Down. And so they're really good contrast to one another, but I forget all their names off the top of my head.
Got it. All right, number two. Do you prefer hot or iced coffee?
Iced.
Iced. I have to agree. I think a lot of people would say hot, but iced is where it's at.
Yeah, I kind of get sad in the wintertime because, you know, you got to switch to the hot coffee, but iced coffee season hits and I'm all about it.
Definitely. Number three, what's one topic or skill that you've always wanted to learn?
I'm a really bad singer and I would actually really love to take voice lessons and get better at it.
Yeah, I see myself singing in the car all the time and I'm like, dang, I'm really lucky that no one's here to hear me because this is bad.
Yeah.
But no, that's great. And last but not least, what is your favorite thing about Philadelphia?
I love the fact that it's full of possibility. I think that, it's a very small town in many ways, but you can really make it your own in so many different ways. It's always evolving. There's always new restaurants. And I really love the fact that it's kind of a city of endless potential and that a lot of people are so gritty that they're always working towards whatever that next vision is. I think that there's a lot of life in the city from that perspective. And I think it's so unique to the city.
Definitely. And when you think about how old the city is, it's one of the most historic in the country. That just adds a whole nother aspect to it that a lot of other places don't have. So love Philadelphia. Gotta love it. What did you study in college and what made you choose that field?
So I actually have a very non-traditional background, I guess, in almost all aspects, but especially academia. I originally started with history. I went to be a history teacher and then realized that they, A, do not get paid very much, and B, have to wake up very, very early. And so I ended up switching to sociology. But I've gone to four different universities in the time that I went to college, still graduated in 4 years, but there was a lot of bouncing around. Not quite as linear of a path, I think, as most people have.
Got it. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about sociology? What exactly is that, the study of, what's involved in it?
Yeah. So sociology is just the study of societies and systems. It really looks into why groups of people and cultures from that way behave. And so it really looks into like a lot of civic infrastructure, social infrastructure. So things like gender studies, poverty, food access, anything like that, that's really a systemic problem. That's really what sociology is trying to understand and get to the bottom of. In many ways, it's a fascinating practice because you don't really think about that. And then once you start diving into it, you start to realize how complex a lot of these systems are and like what the root cause is. I really loved the field, but it is something that like sometimes can get you down because you start to realize like why certain things maybe don't work as intended. But I really love the critical thinking aspect of that, the skills that it gives you to solve through problems. And I thought it was a fascinating major, didn't necessarily intend to get a job in that field, but when I transitioned, it was my minor anyway. So I was like, I'll study something cool and go into real estate or whatever, and ended up in startups instead.
That actually ties in perfectly to the next question I had, which was about your first job. So tell me a little bit about what the first job you had after graduation was. What was the company like? What did your role there look like over the years?
Yeah, so I actually started in the service industry, worked in restaurants and like bartended since I was more or less 14. I started in catering. My sister lied to the catering manager, told him I was 18 because I owed her money for a cell phone bill, and stayed in the service industry for 10 years. So I'd opened a casino, Sugar House in Philly, was a great job in and after college. And then through that job, I ended up meeting this gentleman that was just around all the time, who had sold a software company. And I was like, how do you have all this money that you're always doing these cool things? And like, what does it mean to sell a company? You can just start companies and sell them and like have buku bucks. And so basically when I started to transition out of the service industry, I gave him a call and was like, listen, I know that I don't have professional experience. I don't really understand what you do. But if you have any roles available in your company or your network, please consider me. And at this point he had started a company. What typically when you sell a company, there's like a non-compete and things like that. So after they had exited the first one to Oracle, there was a bit of a gap. And so I got in on the ground floor. I think I was employee number 11, started out as their office manager, very quickly took over HR, was also managing the books for the bars that they owned, which they had three. And then from there, just got plugged into all sorts of different aspects. And so the company itself was a no-code platform. So very early, kind of a competitor to Pega Systems. But we were using that platform in order to build like government technologies. So we ended up building the TARP loan program for the Department of Energy. Department of Treasury. We did an arsenal management system for the DOD. Then we did some work for like clinical trials software, insurance management, digital health records, all that good stuff. So I got to go through the process of working on really complex government projects in a really short timeline. And so when we started working on the government projects, our pitch basically was Accenture had the contract already. They were 2 years in. They still hadn't really brought a prototype to them. And so my boss, the founder of the company, turned around and said, if we can get you a tool in 90 days, can we have the contract? And they were like, yeah, sure. That's never going to happen. But like, yeah, whatever. So they agreed to that. And sure enough, we ended up delivering in 88 days.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a lot of all-nighters. It was like very much a true startup grind. And I just kept getting plugged in wherever they needed support. So part of that was like I was programming through the no-code platform. I was doing quality assurance testing, user acceptance testing with the government. And then ultimately ended up in business development for them when we were looking for new projects. And that was kind of my first foray into sales. So I was with them for almost 3 years. And it was like kind of a tumultuous startup, definitely like Uber office kind of vibes. But it was a really great learning environment because I got to do truly anything and everything in that company, from fundraising to when we were trying to exit the company to unfortunately lawsuits and all those things. And so you really get to understand all the aspects of a startup. And I couldn't have asked for a better, you know, first dive into that space.
Definitely. Now, when you were still in college, had you ever imagined that you might be working in a space like that?
No, for like $1 million, I probably wouldn't have thought that I've ended up in startups or technology. It was just the serendipitous thing that happened, and I've loved the sector ever since. But no, like when I bartended, the head of the Fox School of Business used to come into the bar that I was in, and he would always say, like, I think they have a great business mind, you should go in. And my perception of business was super corporate. And so from my perspective, I was like, no, that sounds awful. That's not the sort of environment I want to work in. Sure enough, like my perception was not the reality. But startups were exactly what I was looking for. And I had some pretty cool internships right around that time or right before that. And that was the one that stuck the most.
That's amazing. Taking a look at your professional experience, I saw that you were able to progress to higher level roles rather quickly after graduating. You took on large projects and management tasks. What prepared you to take on these higher positions of leadership?
You know, I think a lot of it was just being present at the right place at the right time and being open to things, being open to feedback. Having mentorship, I think, was probably the biggest key to success there. One of the things I loved about PSL very early on, because I'd started going to events when I was working for the startup and was like, I need to get out of the vacuum of this one startup and understand what this world is. So when I started going to these networking events, I met people like Bob Moore that had sold, now he's sold over 5 companies, I believe. But at the time he was on maybe his second startup, or Bob Mao that sold Boomi to Dell. And you'd meet these immensely successful people and just being able to learn from them and the time and access that they were giving, even people as junior as myself, I think was just, instrumental. And so I'd actually interviewed with Bob Mao for a job at one of his startups, turned it down, highly regret it, 'cause it ended up selling shortly thereafter. And he's absolutely incredible. But ended up in more corporate roles where I got to learn a lot as an account manager. So when I worked at Randstad and Cision, you're working with an array of different corporations across a lot of different sectors. So you start to really understand different business environments. So I was working in everything from, chemical companies, pharmaceuticals, nonprofits, small startups, really large enterprises, Comcast. And that wide range of scale, I think, started to expose me to all the different things that I needed to know as a leader, right? Like how different systems operate, who's in charge of making certain decisions, when certain things happen in corporations, but also how to manage an array of different personalities and responsibilities. So by the time that I'd gotten to Cision, which was only about about four years after I left school, I was managing $3.2 million in revenue as the sole account rep for the region. And so there was a lot of pressure, and a lot of my clients were going through acquisitions and things like that. So you really learn faster on fire. And then when I started my consulting company, that was kind of by accident. And, you know, same thing when you're in early stage startups. I was employee number 4 at the next company I went to after that. You have to figure everything out from scratch, right? And so there's nothing that prepares you for that. You simply have to go do the work, and everything every day you're learning. And as long as you stay open-minded to it and ask for support, do your research, experiment, and work in spaces that allow you to do so, I think that's the best way to prep yourself as a leader.
That's amazing. And I love the feedback you gave about having that growth mindset at all times, because it's true. Even as a college student, you know that you hear that all the time, just be open to feedback, to learning. But it obviously transpires past your years in college. It goes into industry and beyond that. And I think that's something that all of our listeners should pay close attention to if you really want to take something away from this episode. So after a few years in industry, you began working with Dedicova Consulting, which primarily focuses on helping startups and scale-up companies continue to grow and progress. And what was your reason for switching to this position from where you were previously?
Yeah. So it was kind of this accidental thing that happened. I'd gone to Randstad, which is the largest top 4 recruiting company in the world, very, very corporate, to Cision PR Newswire, which is a mid-sized corporation. And I loved the culture. I mean, Cision was really wonderful, but I actually ended up going through burnout towards the end of my time there. And it wasn't because I was overworked or anything like that. I just didn't feel fulfilled in the role that I was in. It just seemed very repetitive. And I missed a little bit of that chaos and that hands-on work and the variety that you get in startups. And so after I took some burnout leave to figure out what I wanted to do, I realized that I had to go back to the startup world. So I had applied to a job board company out of Thunder Bay, Ontario, which is like the middle of nowhere in Canada. First thought was, this is a scam. I'm going to get kidnapped. What am I doing? I'm signing up for this company sight unseen. I ended up landing that job, and it was so early on that they actually didn't have international banking set up. And so the guy was like, it's easier to pay you through invoicing than it is a payroll. Would you mind if we just paid you as a consultant? And so I'd started with them as a consultant. And then word kind of got out to a handful of my friends that I was doing some consulting work, and organically I ended up getting a couple clients. I actually didn't even have a website until my second year in business and had already had 4 or 5 clients at that point. And so I fell into it accidentally, but really what I did was growth strategy consulting. So focusing on how do we identify market opportunities, product market fit, how do you do your marketing and messaging, how do you build a sales team, what's your go-to-market strategy, all that stuff. And I was primarily working for Canadian companies. The reason why is in the Canadian market, European markets, some other markets outside of the US, there's some really great credits that startups can get to hire talent, especially in sales. So Canada has so many great startup companies that the government helps support. They have excellent infrastructure. They have excellent funding support. However, because most of the folks that are coming to Canada are coming with technical skill sets, there's actually a massive sales gap. So at peak pandemic, there were actually 14,000 sales roles open in Canada and only 3,000 active candidates. Huge gap. So to satisfy that, the Canadian government actually provides reimbursements for your sales and marketing staff. I forget if it was 40% or 60%, but basically my early stage startup team was able to recoup some of the costs of hiring me. And so they could get that high level support that they needed, but without incurring the cost they otherwise would have, right, which I don't think early stage startups can normally support.
That's incredible. And so it obviously sounds like you were much more hands-on with each of the companies you worked with. Can you tell me a little bit about what types of companies you worked with? What industries?
Yeah. So my two major clients, I had a lot of smaller companies that I worked with as well, but my two main ones were in the job board industry. So it was similar to Google AdSense that was improving targeting for job board software. And so traditionally, when you look for jobs, you look for a title and a location, right? What we were doing was actually mapping an array of different characteristics so that way we can improve targeting over 400 data points. And so that was pretty cool. I absolutely loved the HR tech sector. I find that it was one of the most collaborative. So even your direct competitors were always forthcoming with information. It was just a really niche group of people, especially on the talent acquisition side, and just a fun group of folks. And I'm still very close with some folks in that space and absolutely loved it. Some of the other companies I worked with were in the robotics space. So I worked with a drone company that's now doing surveying for breaking through ice in Canada and some of those passages. Yeah, it's really cool. For a while, they were doing some work with the Ukrainian war. And so just really interesting, awesome company. And then was working with some cannabis companies, consumer packaged goods, more HR companies across the US, and then had just started to break into the European markets. And then unfortunately the pandemic happened and I couldn't travel quite as much. But that was also really fun because I was super commuting. So every 4 to 6 weeks I was going up to Canada or to wherever else my clients were. And so I got to travel a ton and loved it.
That's great. And you had mentioned before that you were active in Philly Startup Leaders from very early on in your career. Eventually you started working there. Are you able to tell us a little bit more about what PSL is exactly, what they do, what their mission is, and sort of what your first role there was?
So I've been a member of PSL for 10 years, more or less. I've been leading it for three, first as executive director, now as CEO. And so Philly Startup Leaders is Philly's largest early stage startup community. We service some 13,000 members. We are a nonprofit, and that number is growing astronomically. We had a 9% growth year this year, so that was exciting. But really, we help support early stage founders by helping them connect to the resources they need to start, scale, and grow. And that could be anything from mentor matching, investor matching, networking events, educational content, office hours. We ran an accelerator program since 2014 that's now graduated 280 startups. Basically, consider us a concierge or a switchboard. And then the other side of what we do best is really making those connections, not only to the folks that can help you grow, but a lot of your peers, because you do need that social and psychological safety net as a founder. And you just learn so much from one another. But yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting and varied role. In addition to that, there's kind of this more macro overlay where we do a lot of work around economic development in Philly. And so our mission's really, how do we create more entrepreneurs to foster more economic self-determination? But when you look at what's missing in Philly in order for us to be successful or where there's room to optimize, that's where we really start getting into understanding key markets in Philly, becoming more strategic in the sort of talent or startups that we want to develop, talking about infrastructural development, talking about where funding on a state level goes, things of this nature where you really have to think about the other organizations that are around you and how not only we can support founders, but how they can continue in the life cycle and get the support at every single stage.
That's awesome. And honestly, it sounds like the total culmination of everything that you've been working on prior to that. This is like the ultimate role, really, from the sound of it. Are you able to tell us what your favorite part about working there is?
I gotta say, I think my favorite thing is that I meet the most interesting people all the time. You know, I kind of have this phrase that like the universe just delivers what you need when you need it. And I'm so lucky in the fact that every day I get to learn from people. So we get a lot of referrals. Most of our inbounds are coming from the community. They're very organic. We actually don't do a ton of marketing. But, you know, I'm meeting people that are like PhDs in neuropsychology to people that are starting massive companies, people that have built incubators in New York City. One guy who actually was the lawyer that helped us set up the nonprofit some 10-15 years ago now, Mike Crossy, he was employee number 3 or 4 at Venmo. And so you just run into these cool people and the battle stories are just so interesting, but you get such a range of perspective. And so I'm learning from, early stage people that just have fresh perspectives. I'm learning from people that might have 4 or 5 exits under their belt, sometimes even more. You're talking to investors. You're just seeing how people solve problems on a daily basis. And you're learning about everything from like carbon extraction and space technology to consumer packaged goods to technologies, everything across the board. And I think that variety is by far one of my favorite things. The next kind of thing that I would say in terms of, organically or holistically, what I think is great about PSL is the sense of community. There's no other networking group like it in Philly. It's so community-led. Everyone's so collaborative. They share information. I always joke that it's like the easiest community to manage because all I have to do is give them the space. And truly, when folks show up, it's like pulling up to your friend's house and all the bikes are out front when you were a little kid, great. Right? It's like a reunion every time. And it's incredible because the energy really just creates more of that energy moving forward and invites more people in. And, at our networking events, I really don't have to do much. The community really does what they need.
That's great. And it sounds like an incredible resource. You mentioned that there are a number of industry leaders in that area, which leads right into my next question. You were recently honored as a member of the Philadelphia Titan 100 class of 2023. First of all, congratulations. It's a huge honor. For those listeners who are unfamiliar with this recognition, it's a highly prestigious award given to C-level executives in the top cities across the country who demonstrate exceptional leadership, vision, and passion. So tell me, what does this recognition mean to you?
You know, I wasn't expecting it. At the time, we were so busy. I don't think it sunk in when I first got it. But I've got to say, Titan 100 is an incredible organization. The caliber of the folks that are in your cohorts is incredible, and there's so much range. You know, there's nonprofit leaders, there's small brick and mortar business leaders, there's technologists, there's everyone you could possibly imagine. And actually, in the cohort I'm in, I'm among Rowan's president. And so it's super wow. prestigious. Ali Hushman's just fantastic. And so you learn so much in those groups, and we have these small group discussions when we get together. So there's a lot of activities. It's not just the awards and the recognition. There's really this great networking and social aspect. So there's days of service that they do. They do these meetups. And so we recently did a tour of Philly Distilling Company, but then afterwards we would have these breakout sessions where we were discussing, you know, trends in future of work and return to office to, you know, how folks are approaching lead gen strategies or what technologies they're deploying. And so you learn so much from your peer groups where you can really share those best practices and understand also how similar your problems might be or how similar your wins are. And so there's a mm-hmm. lot of this great exchange of information. And so to be amongst truly giants is just such an honor. I found so much value in that organization. And I know that they're expanding nationwide. And as that continues to grow, there's only going to be more and more power in groups like that. So I absolutely love it. And I'm so honored to be part of Titan 100.
Oftentimes, leadership and service go hand in hand. And I noticed that you've been very active when it comes to volunteering your time and expertise. What role have these experiences played in both your personal and your professional life?
Yeah. You know, I think that's something that I didn't realize was going to be such a big part of my career when I was younger, but volunteer service is so important. You know, it's just so important to give back to others, not only because I do think that, you know, success doesn't happen in a vacuum. Everyone talks about the solopreneur and folks that really pull themselves up by their bootstraps, but no one becomes a successful founder on their own. It takes a lot of other people. And so if you have the opportunity to be successful, if you have wisdom that you've learned, especially if you've learned it through your own failures, I do think that it's your responsibility to share that with others and help support. But there's also a lot of mutual learning that goes on. So I learn a lot from the people that I meet through volunteer work. We are a nonprofit, and so people come and volunteer with us. But also, I just love getting more involved because, you know, we are an ecosystem and we exist within a larger ecosystem. And so you really have to know what's happening. You have to have those relationships. You have to understand what everyone else is working towards to be effective in a role like I have with PSL. And so volunteer work has absolutely created that opportunity for me. And through the amazing relationships I have, if someone needs support or they want me to get involved in something, it's very hard for me to say no. So I try to be as available and as involved as I possibly can. And that's everything from, you know, being a very active neighbor in my neighborhood, which I live in a kind of a transitioning neighborhood on the edge of the continent's largest open air opioid market, unfortunately. And so being an active neighbor and like acting in good stewardship of my community is important to me. But then, you know, we also work on rebranding Philadelphia, where I was co-chair of the Philly Global Identity Partnership that spun out of Brookings Institute's report about, you know, how Philly can meet its growth milestones and like rebrand itself as an innovative city. And then there's an array of other work that I'm just always available to give hands, give time, give support, or give my network access to people. And I hope to do a lot more volunteer work in the future. And I think that that's really where, you know, you can learn a lot and create opportunities for yourself in your job. But I think volunteer work allows you to develop different skill sets. So if you want to change your trajectory at all, that's really a great place to get that sort of experience. And because volunteers are very hands-on, you're learning so much, and it's an awesome resume builder and a great networking tool as well.
As part of your volunteering experience, you've been led here to Rowan as an EAC member. How did you come to join our entrepreneurial community here?
Yeah. So when I was working at Randstad, PNC was a client of mine, and that's actually where I met Professor Greg Payton, who I absolutely adore. I think he's just such a powerhouse and such a genuinely wonderful and warm spirit. And he's always been like that. And so he was super active in PSL when I was just getting involved. And so we would find each other at networking events all the time. He was always one of those people that you could spot out in the crowd and was always there with a smile, a hug, a great story. You know, he's also very creative too. And so, you know, I've always been drawn to just his energy and his perspective as a peer and as a mentor. And so over time, when he had left PNC, he had started working here at Rowan. And when I took over PSL, he was like, well, Naturally, this might be a great opportunity to connect some of the students here to Philadelphia's ecosystem, to share that wisdom, and to get involved in a growing program. So I was very honored to be asked to participate. I actually lived in South Jersey for a couple years in high school, and so knew the area well. My mom actually went back to school later in her career and went to Rowan for an accounting master's, and so knew a little bit about the network. But it's been such a rewarding experience because it's grown astronomically. I think it's what, number one in New Jersey now as an entrepreneurship program. There's over 200 students that are enrolling in this. It's growing so quickly in the 3 years that I've been part of it. And I just love the way that, you know, Rowan thinks about cross-functional entrepreneurship. And I think that's why their entrepreneurs are so strong on a student level. And they're not waiting to get out of school to really start their first companies and get those successes. They're doing it in freshman year in some instances. And it's super cool to watch them grow. They get better truly every single year. And I think Rowan is going to be a quiet giant amongst all the universities in the area. I'm really impressed.
Absolutely. And I have to say, we very much appreciate all of your time and contributions, both being present at competitions and also sharing information about PSL events. It's been a great contribution to Rowan's entrepreneurial students, and we're all very grateful for it. So as we come to an end here, I have to say this has been an awesome episode. And I just have one last question for you. If you could give one piece of advice to students and aspiring entrepreneurs, what would it be?
Keep going. You know, you can't stop. You're going to come up on a lot of different failures. It's going to be tough. You really have to love what you do if you're going to be an entrepreneur, because you're going to get beat up a lot. And you have to get a lot of no's before you get yeses. But I think that if you stick to it, that's really the difference between people that are successful entrepreneurs and those that aren't. You have to pursue it. You have to take feedback. You have to continue learning, but stay the course, build your resilience, lean on your network, and just keep on moving.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for episode number 2 of season 4 of the Entrepreneurship at Rowan podcast. Isabel, thank you so much for your time. We really loved having you, and I'll see you guys at the next one.
Thank you for listening. Rowan is proud to be an official knowledge hub of the International Council for Small Business. Our AACSB award-winning entrepreneurship programs challenge students to solve real problems in bold and impactful ways. If you're interested in supporting entrepreneurship at Rowan, or want to get more involved by hiring an intern, speaking to a class, or being featured as a case study, contact us at rcie@rowan.edu.